LeBron.
Welcome to the family, Brian.
Okay, I guess it's my turn to say grace. We thank you for giving us family. We sit here and praise. Thank you for giving us
beautiful. Just beautiful.
So, Ryan, how'd that Fast and the Furious marathon go? Any standouts?
Oh, sure. Fast 5 was great. And Fast and the Furious 6 is fun. But I gotta say, and I know you're gonna think I'm nuts, but I think Tokyo Drift may be the best Fast and the Furious of all.
What?
I know, call me crazy, but that movie gave me life, man. Justice for Han.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Ryan.
Yeah, and how good could it really be? I mean, Vin Diesel isn't even in that one.
He's got a cameo at the end, and it's full of Vin's spirit.
A cameo is not enough, Ryan. For it to be Fast and or Furious, it's gotta have maximum Vin.
That's how it went from being called Roll for Initiative to The Last Persona. True story.
Wow, that's wild, Vin.
Oh, hey, Cody, you're back! And who is this?
Is that...
Oh, hey, my name's Vin.
As in...
Diesel. Vin Diesel.
Whoa!
And you guys made three mistakes when I walked in here. First, you didn't say welcome to Apocalypse Video. Second, you came light. A three-man crew, for me, fucking insulting. But the worst mistake you made...
Now, Mr. Diesel, please!
You didn't give me a hug.
Huh?
Get over here, man. I hug all my fans.
Oh, right.
You two guys, get over here.
Aw, Mr. Diesel, you're the best.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
I didn't know you were friends with Vin Diesel.
Oh, yeah. We met out on the salt flats in Sector 9. He was testing out this new V8 interceptor. How fast does that baby go again?
0-60 in 2.1 seconds flat.
Whoa!
Even in a post-apocalyptic future, I still live my life a quarter mile at a time. Nothing else matters. For those 10 seconds or less, I'm free.
Whoa! Oh,
yeah!
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah!
That's too fucking cool!
Awesome. Yes! Mr. Diesel?
Please, call me Vin.
Oh, sorry, Vin. You know, I actually just watched the 8th Fast and the Furious movie just before you walked in. That ending with you guys on the roof in New York, so fucking beautiful.
Aw, thanks, man. That means a lot, truly.
I was just wondering, what's your favorite Fast and the Furious movie?
Oof, that's a tough one. That's like asking me to choose between my kids.
But Dominic Toretto's gotta be your favorite character you've ever played, right?
Well... He definitely enriched my life in a lot of ways, you know. But, if I'm being honest here, I think my best character that I've ever played has gotta be Riddick.
Really?
Yeah, man. Riddick was just so badass. If Dominic was my sensitive side, and he is, Riddick was the animal underneath.
Aw, yeah, badass!
Say, guys, I don't mean to stop the conversation here, but do you have a bathroom in here?
Oh, yeah, it's, right back there and to the left.
Thanks, man.
Wow, that man is like pure testosterone.
You know, since he mentioned it, I don't think I ever saw that whole Riddick franchise. I saw the first one and the last one, but I missed the second one.
Ah, dude, the Chronicles of Riddick? That's like the craziest one.
That's the one that has a surprisingly good video game tie-in, right?
I mean, I don't know why you were surprised that it was good, but yeah, it did.
Well, shit, let's watch it. Do you think Vin would mind if we started it without him?
David, he was in the movie. I'm pretty sure he's seen it.
Well, hold on. What if Vin's one of those actors who doesn't like to watch their own stuff?
I never got that impression.
What's that supposed to mean, David?
Nothing. Chad, load up the Chronicles of Riddick.
Certainly, Dave. Would you prefer to watch the theatrical cut or the unrated director's cut?
Well, I mean...
You gotta go unrated, right?
Totally.
Get that PG-13 shit out of here.
You heard him, Chad. Load up the unrated director's cut of the Chronicles of Riddick.
Movie loaded. Beginning playback.
They are a plague that now sweeps through the worlds of man, leaving behind a trail of dead planets and towering icons, monuments to their unholy crusade.
All those poets on all those worlds who spoke of war as such an unsightly thing, they never stood here.
Never fails to inspire, does it? Each time a world falls.
The Necromongers. A dark army that will convert or kill every last human life. Unless they can be stopped. But sometimes, the only way to stop evil is not with good. You must confront it with another kind of evil.
Who the hell are you?
Where does he come from? Who are his people? These are the things I need to know.
Do you remember your home world?
Have you met any others?
Others like yourself.
It's not my fight.
Consider it a test.
Convert now or fall forever.
Are you gonna stop the monsters now?
I am the monster.
Get Riddick.
Here they come!
He's beginning to understand.
Are you with me?
Who is this man?
He sees everything.
You're not the one to bring me down. You're not afraid of the dark, are you?
All right, well, that was The Chronicles of Riddick.
Unrated director's cut.
I'm your host, David Snyder, and joined again by Ryan Caldwell.
Hello.
Michael Althaus.
It's been a long time since I bled my own blood.
Our man in the machine, Chad Greiner.
You are not afraid of the dark, are you?
And joining us in the wasteland, it's always good to catch up with you, Cody. Cody Eastlick.
You keep what you kill.
Oh, man. I just want to say again, like, I still can't believe that Vin Diesel is still alive after all these years. Like, what do you, is it the fury and blood in him that does it?
He hasn't changed in 20 years.
He looks exactly the same.
It's healthy living, guys. Clean eating and healthy living. It'll see you through.
I think you just have you start bald, you know, in your movies, and you know.
That's yeah, the secret. Yeah. You accept the hair loss early in your career, and it just you never age.
Well, the body spends so much of its energy trying to make the hair, but when it doesn't have to do that,
right.
from a younger age, it just gives up and can use those resources to just keep cells regenerating.
Keep building muscle. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's something for sure. He's a specimen.
I wish he was here. Like, he's in the bathroom right now, but I have so many questions for him. But anyway, Chronicles of Riddick, specifically the unrated director's cut, 15 minutes longer than the paltry theatrical cut.
PG-13.
This is a movie... Yeah, the PG-13 version. I remember this movie. My only memory of this movie really is... I have two. I remember the trailer. For some reason, this line stuck with me, where you get the Lord...
Marshall.
Lord Marshall saying, "Who is he? Who are his people?" I, for some reason, that line sticks out in my memory from the trailer. And my second memory, this movie came out in 2004 when I had my first job at Harkins Theaters in Arizona.
Oh, wow.
And I remember, I distinctly remember working the ticket terror thing. Like, people walk in, I tear their ticket, you know, and like, ah, theater two is on your left, whatever. And I remember a guy.
That was you?
That was me.
I'm just fishing you, and you're just like, ah, welcome, Furians. Theater two to your left.
What else?
Funny, I remember.
I don't want to deviate this too far, but
older
like
older guy.
Sorry, but what else was playing? Like, what other like in 2004?
Well, this was 2004. In my short tenure of 3 months or so working at Harkins, this was the summer of 2004. So if you recall, this was The Incredibles.
Oh wow!
This was. Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
Oh, wow. A lot of tickets for that, no doubt.
And arguably the biggest one. Well, actually, no. I think the earlier ones that came out, I'll work up to the big ones.
Okay,
so I said
sure.
Sky Captain, King Arthur, the Keira Knightley, Clive Owen joint.
Yeah.
What else would there have been? Napoleon Dynamite.
Lords and ladies,
year.
The round table is to your right in Theater 7.
White
the
chicks.
Big one of that year, other than The Incredibles, white was, chicks. Of course, Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2.
That was the big one.
I worked at a theater, too, during this time. But I was not in the premium theater. I was in the poor man's dollar theater at this time.
Yeah, you were showing Spider-Man 1 while Dave was helping people to Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, but I feel like you had the better experience because you got to have all the hijinks.
We had hijinks at my theater for sure.
Yeah.
Everyone was hooking up in closets and broom closets, and it was a...
Were you?
People just fucking in the theater, literally.
What?
You didn't do that,
did you?
I didn't. I was the nerd trying to take the girls on a nice date, you know, to the Starbucks or something.
Well, hey, I can get all the popcorn
coming
we want.
In and fucking in the theater.
The what?
He was saying, were people coming into the theater, were they fucking in closets?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But anyway, but getting back to the corporate experience in Harkins, I remember my other Riddick memory, I remember distinctly, it's like, it was a weird situation because the guy walked in, he had his ticket, and he says, "So what's good?" I'm just like, "What's playing?" I'm like, it was kind of this older guy, and I'm like, "Well, there's Chronicles of Riddick." He's like, "Seen it. It was good." Like, okay, there's this and this. Basically, I was just like, okay, what's playing right now? That's good. I'm this and this. And he's like, eh. And he, mind you,
he wanted you to say? He wanted you to be like, I'll show you something you haven't seen before.
Well, no, this is like right. This was what did make sense about this exchange. He had already purchased a ticket. Like, I'm at the point where it's after you purchase a ticket, you come in and I tear your ticket, and then you go into the theater and the concession area and all that.
Yeah, decision has been made by
the
that
decision
point.
Has already been made. So, what's he, why is he asking me? What's good?
Because he's gonna go bounce around, you know.
Yeah, I think he has no intention of respecting the rules of the theater.
Oh, that makes more sense.
That's
I thought
my
he wanted
thinking.
To have sex with David.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that too.
Maybe that too.
Keep the uniform on.
But those are my two distinct memories of the Chronicles of Riddick. I had no desire at the time to see the movie.
Because you were a pretty dumb idiot when you were a kid.
I had not no comment. I had not seen Pitch Black at this time, so I didn't have any, you know.
I don't think anyone knew that this was a sequel to Pitch Black.
Nobody.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, what?
I found that out, like, I think I found that out mid-watching the movie. That this was a sequel to Pitch Black.
Yeah, when they describe the events of the first movie, you're like, I guess that was that.
But that's it. Like, did you guys have any, what's your history all with this movie?
I remember, I never saw it growing up, but I was definitely aware of the Chronicles of Riddick. Like, Pitch Black, no. But the Chronicles of Riddick, because it was like a thing. This was like, I was trying to like read about this on the Chattopedia, and maybe you all know more than I do, or was able to find something, but I remember this at the time being like a one of those first like transmedia things where it's like, here's a game, here's a series of movies, and like we're gonna put out like animes, and you know, there was like a bunch of stuff, and I don't know like why, like was that a pitch, was that like the original like intention that like this is gonna be this like cross media thing, or, like they want to make the Riddick universe happen. I don't know, but I remember.
Well, that's something we can get into in this episode. How did this movie come into being?
I think Vin was just a big pusher for it. Like, he wanted his own like big, you know, Matrix level kind of thing.
It's even cooler than all of that, guys. And I'll tell you this.
Are you his chronicle?
I am his chronicler.
I am his chronicler.
all right. Vin Diesel.
We don't care about your history with Rick Diesel, Ryan. Moving
Vin
on.
Vin Diesel did Pitch Black. He did Pitch Black. And then he did Triple X. And they wanted him to do more movies. But he didn't want to do more Triple X because they went a different way. He agreed to do Fast and the Furious too, probably. Yeah, he agreed to do. I think he agreed to come back to Fast and the Furious for Tokyo Drift, for that like scene and stuff.
Just a cameo.
So long as the rights to Riddick reverted to him.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. Rights to a character in a weird sci-fi horror movie we made. We don't care. And he's like, thank you. And then he went to another studio. He's like, we're making a Chronicles of Riddick movie.
Wow.
And it's going to be my vision. So this was him pushing for this thing.
I didn't realize, like, I knew he starred in it, but I thought it ended there. Like, I thought this was the director's like vision or whatever.
Same director as Pitch Black, though, I think. And the third Riddick movie as well.
I kind of wonder if he undersold it, too, when he's making this pitch. Like, hey, you know, I kind of have a soft spot for that Pitch Black movie and that character. Mind if I get the rights to that character? There would have been a lot of,
I think with Pitch Black, it was kind of those movies, I think, that kind of gained of popularity on cable. Because that's how I remember seeing it. Like, I never saw it in theaters. And didn't really know, but I remember it was on like stuff like TNT or Sci-Fi Channel all the time. Pitch Black was, and it's like a cool little horror movie. It's like Alien, like basically the middle chunk of this movie when they're kind of in that prison planet is the vibe of Pitch Black, really.
Okay.
Which I think is the best part of the Riddick movie too.
Agreed. This one. Well, now hold on, guys. That seems to be a little bit of a strong stance to take. There's so much other good stuff in this movie, such as giant spires made of three faced statues.
That's kind of cool.
The arm, all the Larry, let's just get into it.
Continue. Well, you go a little bit of my backstory with it, because I saw it in theaters, Chronicles of Riddick, and I was excited to see it. And it was like one of those things, like, it's like a movie made for, I mean, I was probably a couple years too old for it, because it's made for like a 12-year-old boy, like this movie. It's like they made, you know, just like action figures and cool stuff. Like, then Riddick does this cool thing and blah, blah, blah.
The Necromongers!
Yeah, I don't know. I watching it now, like, I realize nothing registered kept with me at all. Like, I didn't remember anything.
It's understandable.
I felt the exact same, Ryan. I definitely had seen this before. I think I saw this maybe before I saw Pitch Black, because I was a Vin Diesel fan, and I was like, oh, Chronicles of Riddick, that sounds up my alley. And I had no memory of seeing it. I don't really remember anything about it. For some reason, I remember being like more confused, and I don't know if maybe I watched the original cut of it, but this time watching it again, it all makes sense. Like there's a lot going on, but it's not like completely nuts. For some reason, I got the impression that when I saw it originally, it was like none of it made sense, or you know, didn't track or something. So it just didn't stick with me, because I was like, I don't know what that was exactly. But this time, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
It's just a weird thing, because he's not really, from what I remember, he's not really the main character. He's kind of like the guy that kind of like becomes like sort of like the character, really. Like,
yeah,
he's,
his character in the first one is just, he's a criminal that they're transporting, so he's the bad dude, like, and he's a serial killer or some dude, and he got his eyes like replaced with night vision eyes. Like, that is his whole angle, is he's
they
some
explain
badass
that in the first
killer.
I was wondering, like, what the deal was with that.
Well, because, yeah, my vague memory of Pitch Black, like, there is none of this Chronicles of Riddick lore that we get.
All
right,
let me
Pitch
pull up
Black,
the Chatterpedia,
right?
And we'll fucking read the synopsis.
Well, it's just like, I'm like, the Pitch Black, like Ryan said, was a very pretty straightforward horror movie, like a sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah, and there's not really fantastical elements. It's just kind of like these aliens, and they're on like a dark planet, and that's the whole thing, is he can see at night, you know.
Are the Necromongers in Pitch Black at all?
No.
It's basically just aliens and like these ragtag guys, and Riddick's like the weird freak, you know. That's just like
the plot for Pitch Black on Chattopedia is actually fairly long. I'm kind of surprised by that.
These nerdy movies are always like really detailed, because someone gets on and is like, well, actually, there's a lot more going on in the story. I should.
In the distant future, the spaceship Hunter Gratzner is transporting passengers in cryostasis. Among them are a Muslim preacher who goes by the title of Imam, accompanied by three young sons traveling to New Mecca, a teenager named Jack, a pair of prospectors named Shazza and Zeke, a merchant named Paris, and a law enforcement officer, William J. Johns, who is escorting the notorious criminal, Richard B. Riddick. Riddick has surgically modified eyes that allow him to see in the dark, but are highly sensitive to light. The micrometeoroids from a comet rupture the ship's hull, killing the captain and sending the ship off course. The surviving crew members attempt to land the ship on a nearby planet. As the ship falls apart, docking pilot Carolyn Fry attempts to dump the passenger section to reduce the weight, but co-pilot Owens prevents her. During the crash, several passenger compartments are destroyed, and Owens is fatally injured. This is just the plot. It's the whole
thing. Don't read the whole movie.
But I could. Basically, then they crash, and then there's monsters
on
the dark planet.
Well, there's one bit of synopsis in there that got my attention that seems to be retconned in this movie. You mentioned that Riddick's eyes were surgically implanted or something, uh-huh. Whereas in this movie, it seems to suggest that Riddick is a Furian.
No, you're completely wrong.
Okay.
In the movie, it clearly states that he gets them given to him.
Oh, okay. But he is also a Furian, right?
Yes, he is a Furian. Okay. Come on, David.
See, I just don't make that, me do the last this. Of I just assumed kind. That if you were a Furian, you had, like, you know, alien eyes and you
no.
could see in the
dark. We see another Furian in this movie, and they don't have the weird
We
eyes.
Meet multiple.
Oh, that's right. No. Okay, right. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm just kidding.
No, I mean,
well,
this
give me
movie.
A break. There's like five different plot lines going on.
Yeah, this
movie
is like nonstop.
I'm sorry, you didn't track all of that?
This is like lore dump the movie.
Mm hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
There's no that's exactly how I felt. I felt like this movie. I felt like I was. It felt like this was like the fourth movie in a series of movies, and there's all this already established lore. But it turns out, no, all the lore is in this movie alone.
It turns out it's a perfect film.
Oh my god, this is Alita all over again.
It's kind of is Alita.
It is.
I mean,
a lot
Alita's
like
better,
that.
I think, but it is a lot like it.
I think Alita is better than this. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, 100%. But they're similar. They're on similar wavelengths,
yeah,
for sure.
Like, Michael, you're talking about like the kind of the media push, like the massive thing with like games and stuff. Like, I remember like the Xbox game, the Escape from Butcher Bay, which is name-dropped in this movie.
Yeah. Escape from Butcher Bay is like a legit good game. That game is probably like the best thing to come out of the Riddick franchise.
Yeah. No, hold on.
That was like a big deal, though, because like it was like a big deal that like Vin Diesel's in the game. Like, it was like, that was like the big deal of that. And also, like, the graphics were like a big step up for Xbox.
Yes. Mm.
And also, like, that he was voiced. He was in, I think maybe they did motion capture with it. But, like, yeah. There wasn't many games doing that before that.
And it was a game based off of a movie franchise that was good. That was the other, like, you know, shocking part of it was that it had all these things. It's like, oh, it's not a game they just tacked on. Like, it's Pitch Black, the video game. Mm-hmm. It is a specific game. It's not the movie story. It is a separate story. It was following on the tales of, like, all the Matrix cross-media stuff. Yeah, Path of Neo and whatnot. So that was it was a different time.
I got to imagine. I bet if we dug into the Chatterpedia on this, I bet you that Vin Diesel, like, because from what I remember, Vin Diesel was, like, a big gamer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
He's a big RPG guy too, maybe, isn't that?
Yes, he is a big D&D nerd.
Yeah,
it's crazy that we could say still that he's still alive.
Yeah, he's just in the bathroom. Yeah. Like, I know how we got here, but how do you think he got here?
Jesus,
I mean,
Christ,
he's been there in a while. I don't know if, you know, we don't want to count our chickens before they hatch, but
he could probably hear us that too.
What a crazy end. After everything, he dies on the toilet in a video store in, like, the near future.
I mean, statistically, our
like,
bathroom
it's not
is
the future,
not
there. It's the present for us, but...
But, yeah, I remember being excited for it, but nothing really registered, other than, like, some of the visuals. Like, what's her name that's from Westworld?
Tandy Newton,
like, I remember her, she really popped. I remember because I was like,
oh yes.
Yeah, I remember
she pops. Yeah. She pops a lot.
And then, like, Carl Urban taking off the helmet.
Carl Urban is swimming in the Valley of Ham, as they say.
Oh, yeah. Nah, he rules.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's intentional. I think he knows what he's doing.
But that's
all. I
just
didn't feel like he was that handy.
That's all I really remember from the movie.
Well, he's like, probably just, like, looking at the script and thinking, like, oh, okay, so, like, I'm part of the third movie, right? This is all going to be in another movie? All my storyline? This is leading up
to
another
like
movie,
a,
I'm assuming?
This is like Lord of the Rings, we're shooting all three movies at once, okay? Oh,
yeah.
What?
Because
that's the vibe I got from Carl Urban and Tanny Newton. Like, they were among one of the many plot lines going on in this movie where I'm just like, you know, that we touch on a little bit here and there. And I'm just like, but not enough to seem like the focus of the movie is about them. I'm like, all right, clearly this is like some other movie that's going to happen. It never did. But yeah, it seems like that's what it's suggesting.
Do you think in another lifetime this could have been like a HBO miniseries kind of thing?
Well, funny you should say this. All right, real quick, guys. You know, back in timeline prime, before the dystopia, there were two sequel projects approved, right? So there's Riddick. We know there's a third movie. Yeah. There was a fourth movie titled Furia that has a script and is Vin Diesel said in like 2014, 2016 that was going to be made. And then they also were doing a TV show called Merc City.
Merc City!
And, you know, who knows if that ever happened. I like to believe it did. I like to hope. But that's something special.
Maybe it had a cool video game tie-in, too. Who knows?
Yeah. It's that whole time, because I pointed this out, I think, while we were watching it. But there's a poster for Chronicles of Riddick in the second 50 Shades of Grey movie.
Dorian Gray.
Yeah, in his bedroom, his childhood bedroom, has a poster for Chronicles of Riddick on the wall in it. That's the legacy of this movie a little bit.
which just stinks of like the studio going, all right, what movies do we have?
Yeah, it's Universal.
That would have come out around this time that would be age appropriate.
Yeah. I guess contractually, if we put this poster in, all we have to do is send Vin Diesel a check for $1,000. We're fine.
Probably not even that. But no,
yeah, probably not. He's probably just happy. He's like, yeah, kids love my movies.
Yeah, it's a cool poster. I think I remember even having it for a little while from the Dollar Theater.
It's a very cool poster.
Yeah.
Is that you're talking about the thing where he's like hulking and looking back at the camera?
It's sort of his back, and you have like that planet with like the sun kind of rising, like the.
Son of Crematoria.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I think that's just, they were selling on, this is gonna be a perfect movie for 12-year-old boys. You know?
You could just stop there. This is a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Well, all right. If you say so. Cody.
What's up?
You seem to retain story points and character names better than the rest of us. I'm going to leave it to you.
It must be. It has to be my history of playing role-playing games and like reading fantasy novels, because like there is a certain brand that is wafting through this movie that I'm just like, oh yeah, this is a D&D movie, but with like laser guns instead of swords and bows and arrows and stuff. And it's the fucking best. That the main character's name is Lord Marshall, that he's the half-dead, that's a title, they're the necromongers, it's all the best. So what do you want me to do?
With that being said, why don't you break down the plot of
Tell us about the Chronicles of Riddick.
Sure. All right, the Chronicler. All right, so Riddick, Chronicles of Riddick, the whole setup is that... you know, Riddick, he's on the run still after fleeing from Pitch Black. He's still a criminal. There's still bounties out on him. And he eventually gets caught because his old friend Amon didn't pay. There's a bounty on his head, and he guided them to find him. The reason that there was a bounty on his head is the last elemental, Arion, played by Judi Dench, needs him to tip the balance, as it were, in this fight with the Necromongers. The Necromongers are a race of warrior-like people. They're religious fanatics. They believe in their underverse, and they're trying to wipe out the universe or convert those who will join them. So they're kind of like this galaxy rampaging.
It's the Borg,
you know, zealots, and it's not like the Borg at all, but that's fine.
they're Mormons.
I mean, they're necro Mormons. All right. Anyways, so Arion the Elemental knows that Riddick is actually Furion, and that there is this prophecy that a Furion male child will slay the Lord Marshal of the Necromongers. And knowing that this prophecy has been foretold some 30 years ago, seeks Riddick to put him in the place where he can defeat the Lord Marshal and stop the Necromonger rampage across the galaxy. Yeah, that's basically the plot, I think.
That's the bookend.
That's
plot.
One of the movies in it, I think.
In the middle of the movie, Pitch Black happens again, and some mercs
Yeah, it's great.
So Burks capture Riddick and bring him to the prison planet of Crematoria.
Which, guys, this, I don't know what you're confused by. This was all Riddick's plan. He wanted them to take him to Crematoria. Like, that's why he suggested the planet, man. It's all a part of the plan, man. Riddick's got every step planned out.
So that's pretty much where most of this movie takes place. We get Pitch Black 2, essentially, for all intents and purposes. Stuff happens, he eventually gets off, and then the bookend plot resumes that Hody was talking about. And long story short, Riddick becomes King Riddick at the end, essentially, a la Conan the Barbarian.
He becomes King of the Necromongers.
King of the Necromongers, and just sort of like slumps into his throne, like he just kind of happened upon, and like, ugh.
Credits.
Like that. Credits.
No, excuse me, guys. Ugh.
You keep what you kill.
Credits.
He kills the Lord Marshal.
I think we should, if it...
And becomes King of the Necromongers.
If it's not clear, like, I think it has to be said at some point. This seems as good a point as any. Riddick, like, exclusively talks in one-liners. Like, I don't think there's... I don't think he has a natural line of dialogue in the movie. It's all like,
you keep what you kill.
It's all that. Even the longer sentences are still one-liners, like...
You made three mistakes. First, you took the job. Second, you came light. A four-man crew for me is fucking insulting. But the worst mistake you made... Empty gun rack.
Yeah!
Empty gun rack.
So, oh, yeah, I love... That was one of the best parts of the movie.
You made three rules. Mistakes.
Yeah, it's a... It's kind of funny. I feel like he doesn't... I don't know if he works as our main protagonist in a weird way. Does anybody... You know, I think it's a character that... Like, I'm thinking like Drax in Guardians, you know? It's like such a good side character, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't think he's supposed to be as funny as... Like, I think he works. I think that there are issues with the movie, and I think that the stuff that doesn't work and I think makes Vin Diesel not as good as he could be is... I just don't think it's like shot well or edited well, especially the action stuff. It kind of becomes like incomprehensible. Like I get what's on paper going on, but the blow by blows of the action, it just like it doesn't. It's too frenetic for it to like really make sense. Yes. I think, and that makes I think that prevents him from being the intense hulking action kind of star you want. And so a lot of it is just it's just left to his quips and the occasional glimpses of him doing something, which usually looks cool when you do see it.
And his pecs.
See, why I like the middle chunk of the movie is it kind of brings him with like a group of people.
Side characters.
And
I think that's what your point is, Ryan. I think I agree with you, which is that it's not necessarily that he's not a good protagonist. Like, I think he could be a good solo thing, but just by the nature of the movie, since he's like a quiet guy, like they always have some side characters with him to like bounce stuff off of so that he actually has to.
He's like Piccolo.
He's like Piccolo, dude.
That's good, yeah.
Well, yeah, like in the first half of the movie or so, like most of his appearances are him like, I'm out of here. Like him leaving, you know what I mean? It's just like, okay.
Yeah, it is strange. It's a strange movie, but it like even your description though, Cody, I'm like, oh, that sounds like a good movie. Like I'm
like, Ryan, it is a good movie. We watched it.
Well, I think I think just the problem with it is that you just described you and I described two movies going on at the same time. It's like you got the bookends with like the prophecy. He's going to take down the Lord Marshal, but then the middle becomes Pitch Black 2. And I think if it had just focused on one thing, I would have liked it a lot more. Cause like Ryan said, like I really got behind the middle chunk of the movie on Crematoria.
That's a dumb name.
It's not Crematoria.
Get out of here.
It was accept it for what focused. It is.
Yeah, it's more focused, and it doesn't rely on a ton of backstory, even though there is backstory with Kira, previously known as Jack. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more focused, I think, in the middle chunk, whereas the other part, there's just so many characters and so much backstory that it's just like, it's daunting trying to, like,
well, the middle chunk, as opposed to the later chunks, is less epic by definition.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah.
less lore, there's less, like, you know,
no giant
destiny.
Statues with faces.
It's a clear goal. It's get from here to there. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah, I mean,
that's
the first... the first like set piece of this movie is on Helion Prime after that little like action sequence with the frozen planet, but it's like literally like world ending battle destruction, and then cut to that later. It's just a little like small prison cave breakout scene. Like it's I mean it is very different, but in a way though that I kind of liked the feeling. It made it feel like this is like a serial, like an adventure serial.
Yeah.
Like
yes,
that this is the Chronicles of Riddick. Like we're getting multiple like that's discrete that, stories.
Mike,
there was something there. 100%
correct. 100% correct. That it is, there's a lot going on in this universe. The Necromongers aren't ending the galaxy. They're just ending this one planet right now. You know, like, and then, you know, there's still stuff going on. Like, there's this war happening on Helion Prime, but bounty hunters are like, yeah, we're still after this guy. We don't give a shit about this planet, which speaks to, like, how the galaxy at large is dealing with the Necromongers, where it's like, oh, we've heard of them or whatever, but who cares? They're not really, you know what I mean? It makes the galaxy feel so much bigger that this
movie
takes
place
in. It does.
I think that's one of the things this does well, is that it does make the universe seem big. Like, it doesn't, there's a lot of these kind of sci-fi movies that end up making the world feel small. And this one, I totally agree. Like, I liked that some people were like, the Necromonger's like, whatever. Like, that was an interesting thing. There's cool stuff in it. I love that he became the king of the Necromongers at the end. We talked about that already, but that was like one of the choices about the movie that I was like, damn. Like, I almost wish, like, did they make a movie where he's like king of the Necromongers and dealing with that? Because I'd watch that.
The third movie, Riddick, I think, picks up after he's like ditched the Necromongers.
it was the great, like, this should be an HBO series, and that'd be the great, like, end of an episode. It's like, what, he's the king of the Necromongers?
It's so funny because you think of it like Vin Diesel. It's this badass movie with these one-liners and these cool knives and these cool glasses, but it's such a nerdy fucking ass movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it rules.
He wears goggles.
I know. It's just so fucking nerdy. Like, I don't know.
Every time there was a shot of him in the goggles and his, like, cape, like, running around the dark city, like, swooping his cape around.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jumps. Like, pretty... he's, like, high angle, like,
This was kind of the first of Vin Diesel's, like, I want to turn my D&D campaign into a movie type movies.
Yeah.
Because, like, there were several more after this that he did. I feel like there was, like, Babylon AD.
Really?
There was The Last Witch Hunter. These movies that feel so nerdy. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of movies that are nerdy, but, like, this is, like, a very specific branch of nerddom.
Have you guys seen The Last Witch Hunter? We should talk about that.
I think you and I watched it a long time
I've never
ago,
heard of it.
Oh, God, it's a
treat.
Well,
isn't
that,
that's the one that's legit, like, he took, like, his D&D character and put it in the movie, right?
Yes, and there's, like, lines about somebody being a level 12 warlock or some shit.
We should watch that.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me. I mean, I haven't played The Witcher 3, but, like, I don't know. Like, I, for some reason, was thinking of that watching this, too.
Geralt? He reminds you of Geralt?
Yeah, just from what I've seen of The Witcher. I don't know. I'm not really familiar, but like a video game character, you know?
He's totally he is. That. Yeah, he is a video game
character. He's kind of like the lead character from Escape from Butcher Bay.
Yeah, he reminds me of that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a weird one. Like, I don't know. There's for some reason for me, like even with this big, massive, like planet killing, you know, destruction of this thing, like it's still like that does feel big. And for some reason, like, Riddick getting wrapped up into it, like, it somewhat seems off. Like, there's, like, a puzzle piece missing or something. I don't know. Like, it just seems like he's just this one guy. I know he's, like, a Therian and all this stuff and destined, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
But for some reason, it just, like, for some reason, it doesn't connect. I don't know why, for me. Like, you have him getting wrapped up into this whole huge planet-ending thing. I don't know, he just seems so much more lower level. And I guess that's the idea. Like, it's just like this
The Keith David character is kind of like the Obi-Wan figure, kind of like getting him into...
Yeah.
Like, inviting him into the world a bit. But there could have been more of that, I think, for sure.
Well, he's just gone, like, immediately. And, like, they make this... It seems like the movie's trying to make some sort of big deal about Keith David's daughter and his wife. But they are gone from this movie. And mind you, we watched the director's cut, and I was hoping, like, all right, well, surely they're gonna come back and play some sort of role in this. They made such a big deal about the daughter. Nah, you see them in the end looking up into the sky like, oh yeah, and that's it. Yeah. I think they were just sort of a victim of the many storylines going on in this movie. And it makes me wonder what the script for this movie was like initially, like how many drafts there were. Like
it's probably thousands of pages long.
Yeah, like what threads there were.
It's, and it's funny.
Got excised, you know?
It's funny you say that specifically, Dave, because that reminds me of something I wanted to mention. I was trying to think of, like, what does this movie remind me of? Like, what's other stuff?
Thor in the Dark World.
One of the things...
Oh! Is it just because it's dark a lot, Ryan?
It's the costumes.
The costumes, yeah. I was thinking bigger than that. Just, like, what does this movie remind me of? And it was actually Rise of Skywalker. Like, that it's, like, a lot of kind of explaining stuff. Like, hey, this is the thing now, and this is... Mm-hmm. We're establishing rules, and this is what's happening, and... the movie, I think, kind of like that's the big problem with the movie. I feel like is it gets bogged down in that and doesn't ever really escape. But it has a feeling of several drafts, like lots of people involved, like throwing things and hoping something sticks.
I don't know.
It felt like there was a lot of like leftover plot threads from previous versions of the script that still stuck around and maybe never got resolved.
All right. So a few thoughts. Ryan, to go back to what you mentioned about how it feels like it's just not connecting, like it feels like there's something missing. I almost think that is intentional, just maybe not handled correctly, because it's very... The story as it is very Greek myth. It's very tragedy, right? Like there's this prophecy that the only reason it comes about is because the guy hears about the prophecy and tries to stop it. It's like, oh, there's going to be a male Furian who will kill you. You kill all the Furians. And it's I don't even think it's necessarily that Vin Diesel is the destined Furian. It's just like because he's one of like a handful left, he is one with the ability to kill him, right? So it's like Vin Diesel, excuse me. We should stop saying that. Richard B. Riddick. He does
good old Dick.
Good old Dick B. Dick B. Riddick.
Dick Riddick.
Dick Riddick. He doesn't care about any of that, right? So he's not involved in that story. He's trying to get out of there. He's like, I don't fucking care about the Necromongers. He's trying to go save Jack. He's trying to go do that. But because the universe kind of is conspiring against him and he has this fate, this destiny, he keeps finding himself pulled back into it. And so like there is this disconnect because it's not what he wants. Like what he wants is these other things. But just by everything else happening, he has to be drawn back into it. And that's the same reason like, oh, he then acts, he kills the guy and then he... you know, without thinking, falls into the throne. It's not like he's like, oh, I'm going to sit here because this is where I should sit. It's after he holds his friend's dead body who he was trying to save that he's like, oh, fuck. And then he sees that he
slumps back into the chair.
And he realizes that he has assumed the title of Lord Marshall. Yes, of course. Yeah. Like, so there's this thing where I'm like, the more I think about it, the more I'm all like completely on board. Is just, it's like, yeah, he's just, you know, there's a prophecy that was told and he's the guy that the people think it's about. It's like the same thing with, well, fucking anything, right? I mean, like, the Lord Marshal chose him as like, oh, he's the Furian. He's the one who's after me. So I'm going to put all my forces to chase him down. It's like Harry Potter. If he hadn't done that, Riddick wouldn't have come back and killed him. Like the only reason he did is because the guy was so certain that Riddick would be his downfall that he made him his enemy. And it's fucking great.
You made three mistakes.
Yeah.
You made three mistakes. You believed in the prophecy. You sent your necromongers after me. And then you fought me in a fist fight. I'm Vin Diesel. I'm Richard B. Riddick.
It's something funny about it I was thinking about while watching it is that it's so like earnest, the movie. And like,
yes.
And it's something like that you couldn't it's really make like anymore. Like that's the reason why like there's such a turn in Thor Ragnarok, you know, like it's such a different departure from Dark World that was a little bit more earnest, you know, about Asgard and all this stuff. And they're like, that shit's nerdy. You know, it's just.
I think honestly, Ryan, talking about earnestness, like Vin Diesel is the most earnest actor in the world. Like
he is.
He loves these nerdy things and he makes them because he thinks they're cool. And he's not like trying to put a shine on it. It's the same thing with the Fast and the Furious movies. Those movies are just like, they're about family. And it's so overtly about family. It's not like, but it's also about action. It's like, you know what, but it's about this. This is the important thing for
And that's
for
why I got mad at The Rock, movies. Right? You know? Like,
yeah, and that's why The Rock fucking ruins it. And God, he's the worst. I hate The Rock. Because The Rock isn't an earnest person. He's, you know, and he's always on. He's trying to sell stuff. Or he was. RIP. Maybe he's out
a politician.
He is very much a politician, and Vin Diesel's just like, I love these things, and I love my people, and I will always do these things with the people that I love.
There's something... something I like about Vin Diesel, and this brilliantly captured in this movie, is he does straddle the line of, on the one hand, like, he does seem cool. Like, there's parts of him that seem cool, but he's not quite there. Like, he's not totally cool. Like, there is, like, on the one hand, he has this, he's a beautiful specimen of a man and has, like, this intensity. But on the other hand, he's, like, really bad at acting and wearing these, like, goggles and has a cape. But he's, like, giving it his all. And it makes him very fun to watch. Like, he is a good...
You fully believe that he cares about everything he's doing.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he's not like too cool. He's not too cool for this shit.
Yes,
yes, yes. That's it. He's not too cool. In fact, he's not cool enough.
No, he's the exact right amount of cool. I disagree.
There's no like, there's no tongue in cheek moments in this movie where he's like subtly like making fun of the nerdier aspects
or the people who would like this movie. Like, he is not that at all.
He's fully embracing all of these things. Yeah.
Yes, and that's what makes it like, you know, it makes it special in its own way. You know, it's
kind of like, I'm trying to think of a comparison. The first thing that just pops in my head, very different actor, but in the same way, I think Mark Hamill is like. You know he's like in on it, like he gets it, and like he's, I don't know, there's something about like there's certain actors where it's like, I know you're like even nerdier than I am, like you're into this.
Yeah
There's no Han Solo to kind of shit on it, like everything that's happening. Which is interesting, because it's like it's almost like a detriment, but also I appreciate it. It's like weird. I'm like, I'm really mixed about it.
It might make the movie not as good as it could be, but it's like, I would rather have this movie that's earnest and like weirdly sweet and like like completely honest with itself and a little bit less good than a movie like, you know, fucking Hobbs and Shaw, which is so manufactured that it's like, oh, this movie is meant to be this, but it's like, yeah, but it's kind of hollow because it doesn't actually
literally says Fast and the Furious presents.
So it's like, you know, not to keep going back
such
to
such a weird thing to say.
It's weird. Rise that I find
of Skywalker,
myself
I think is another
what's that, Rise
to bring up another franchise. I think Rise of Skywalker would be another comparison.
Yeah, but everybody's like is like the same person in that movie, you know, I guess, you know, in a strange way. I don't know, we don't have to talk fucking Star Wars, man.
Yeah, the vein on Ryan's forehead is growing dangerously large.
And irradiating orange.
He's going to throw these dice out the window.
The Star Wars dice.
You're dead to me, Star Wars.
Oh, God.
I stand Riddick now.
I never saw the third movie. I never saw it.
I have, but it's the same thing as the first Riddick, same thing as Chronicles of Riddick, where it's like, I watched it and I remember being like, oh, okay, that's what that was. I feel like after watching this one, the way it ends, I'm like, I gotta watch the third one right now. Like,
well, the third
I might
one,
go watch it later today, to be
the
honest.
The third one was kind of like the prototype Logan. Like, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, Cody, after the movie, like, it's kind of like the prototype Logan. It's just like, hey, you know what? Let's get a smaller budget this time. Let's focus on maybe a smaller thing and get the character back to its roots. You know what I mean? And the third movie is very much like Pitch Black, kind of again, much smaller scale, and it's just him trying to like escape somewhere, right? If I remember correctly.
That seems to be his thing. Like, they're always like, he's so good at escaping. You know, everyone says.
Well, and the third movie, if I recall. Was like the first half of the movie is him by himself. Like, there's no other characters. It's just him, like in this desert world, and he's got like this alien dog with him.
Do you want me to read?
Sure. Where does Riddick go from the Chronicles?
You got to get a good music bed under all these.
Oh yeah.
5 years after Kira's death, Riddick has become increasingly uneasy in his role as Lord Marshal of the Necromancer. His refusal to swear into the Necromonger faith has caused dissent among his subjects and assassination attempts by his sword subordinates.
Oh.
After the latest attempt on his life, Riddick strikes a deal with Commander Vako, the location of Furia and a ship to take him there, in exchange for Vako succeeding him as the next Lord Marshal, so that he can achieve what he calls transcendence. Led by Vako's aide, Krone, Riddick and a group of Necromongers arrive on a desolate planet. Realizing that it is not Furia, Riddick kills most of his escort when they attempt to assassinate him. In the chaos, Krone causes a landslide and buries Riddick alive.
So it's very much Pitch Black in that he ends up on a planet that he doesn't want to be on, and everyone's out.
I am happy to hear they continue the like Lord Marshall storyline.
Yes, yeah, me too.
Well, I forgot about that, because my only memory of Riddick, the third movie, was like, I remember there was some sort of like, I want to say it was an after credit or stinger moment where like Carl Urban does come back, like in a little cameo or
Looks
something.
Looks like he's in the beginning.
So oh, it's the beginning. Well, that's, okay, yeah, it's just been so long.
It doesn't matter.
But anyway, yeah, my memory of that movie is like it was a really fun like survival story with him on this desert planet and with this alien dog. And it's just him and his dog, and I'm like, I want the whole movie to be this. Other characters come in, like what's her like the Starbuck character from Battlestar Galactica Katie Sackhoff comes in.
Oh wow!
And it kind of becomes great. Pitch Black again.
Yeah, there's
but there's
really
a huge chunk of that movie that's just like. What was that Liam Neeson movie where he's like surviving
the gray?
It's like the
gray. That movie is art.
It said, you know, substitute snow with desert locale, and it's just him surviving with an alien dog, and it was beautiful. But I think the reason that and Pitch Black work is because it's focusing on one small story. This one, it's trying to do both. And honestly, like it's funny, as I was taking notes of this movie, I was trying to take so many notes in the first third where we're getting all this lore building, and eventually I just stopped because I'm just like, I'm not gonna remember this shit. I'm not gonna be able to connect the dots. I just gave up and just I'm like, Cody's gonna have my back, like he's gonna remember all this shit. So I just stopped taking notes at a certain point.
I took three notes.
What are your notes, Ryan? What are your three notes?
It's literally two of them are lines, and then the other one of them is basically just a thing I liked.
All right, go ahead, hit us with them.
So the thing I have this is Tandy Newton's character. I said I like the burning on mascara is what I put. Yep. On. She like burnt. She has like a soldering iron and is like burning on her mascara or something like that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
What are your other two notes?
But basically, I just thought it was just cheesy and funny. Our lead necromancer guy, he's like, "So I'll steal your soul." Like,
and he does
that's the thing.
Big Mortal Kombat energy.
That's the thing. Can we address that real quick? Like, do they? So he gets into like they send him into the dark arts or something like that, or
what?
Yeah, he's a Necro-Mormon. Like, did they explain how he's able to do that?
Yeah, because he's been to the Underverse.
Oh, okay, right.
Like, he is the only Necromonger who's been to the Underverse. That's why they call him half-dead, right? It means he's between worlds.
As opposed to the quasi-deads.
As opposed to the quasi-dead who are able to, like, communicate across, like, that galaxies.
They're like the priests of the
Speaking of that, that's my other favorite line is that he's not a man. He's the holy half-dead who has seen the Underverse in return of powers you can't imagine.
Yes, I also... I have that note as well. It just says, holy half-dead who has seen the Underverse! Exclamation point. Is on my notes.
That's like, there's so many weird things like that in this movie where, like, their telephone system consists of, like, talking to, like, a body on a slab.
Right, because they all work into the Underverse, which I guess is kind of like, I don't know, maybe, like, dark matter or something because, like, their guns shoot, like, weird
stuff. Well, it was almost funny. You know how, like, a speaker will, like, when it's rumbling, like, it'll have that reverberation or whatever? In this, it's almost like, it looks like a little Jurassic Park moment where you got this black tarry liquid, like, bloop, 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 like, it's like a speaker.
I really enjoy that the whole thing is based around this faith of warriors. Who believe in the death afterlife so much that there is soul-based powers that they can communicate across the galaxy using people who are more dead than alive so that they mostly exist in that afterlife where I guess time and space means nothing, which rules. It's fucking cool. it might not make the most sense, but
so
it's great.
Many just weird details like that in this movie. We're like, I gotta hand it to this movie. Like, I think it's crazy that Vin Diesel was somehow able to secure $150 million for the sequel to a movie that
it wasn't even a huge hit.
I mean, it wasn't a huge hit when it came out. It became like it garnered a following after it came out. This movie came out. What was it? 4 or 5 years after Pitch Black?
Maybe more.
And it's insane to me. Like I'm trying. I guess honestly, I can only assume the studio did it because they're like, all right, XXX made a shitload of money. Fast and Furious 1 and 2 made a shitload of money. I guess it had to have been on the faith of those movies, right?
Had to be.
Yeah, what else did Vin Diesel do?
He's the next.
Yeah, they're probably like, this guy's the next fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger or some shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Matrix sequels are coming out around this time. Yes, and just like kind of that vibe. And like the Star Wars movies, like they're just, you know, where the prequels are happening. And so they're just like, you know, this is the vibe. And Universal needed it.
It's just crazy to me that the studio took a chance. This was a big chance that they took, and I don't think this movie made a ton of money. It didn't make its budget back.
Seemed like So the budget is listed between 105 and 120 million, and the box office was 115.8 million.
Oof! Is that domestic or worldwide?
I don't know. It's whatever Chattopedia says.
Okay.
And Pitch Black it had a more modest budget of like $20 million.
Yeah,
but it did make $53 million. So, yeah, so it doubled
modest,
its budget.
Modest,
but hit. Yeah, you know, not nothing nice. Crazy.
Yeah, I think it was but one of those that not... probably just stayed like in the top 10 for a long time. Like he was probably like a Pitch Black. I mean, like it probably wasn't one that like was a huge like hit right off the bat, but like kind of stuck around for a while.
In reading on the Chattopedia, it was definitely one of those movies that did well on DVD after its release.
It's just shocking to me that they you don't really get that anymore. Well, you don't get any movies anymore, but like that wasn't something that happened a lot after this. I feel like the last ones I remember were Cloud Atlas was like a really big movie that they God, like made the movie based on like the faith of their previous hits, you know what I mean? And it's just like this was like one of those like later movies where they took a chance on something that wasn't a proven property and it failed. And I think this is you can kind of choke this up to one of those movies in a list of films where they took a chance, it failed. And I feel like this is kind of one of those movies that probably aided Hollywood's decision to like stop taking chances a little bit. You know what I mean?
So, you know, what's interesting is
I also think though, like the mistake here was they were trying to force something a bit. Like time, like if it, you know, 2004, you're looking around and you're saying like, oh, we could have like one of the Matrixes or one of the Star Wars where we have this gigantic franchise. And I could see the pitch being like, listen, we just have to have one of these things stick, like the video game will stick or whatever. And down the, you know, if we can capture this and get people into this universe, then this is going to make us money forever. But they were kind of jumping the gun. Like, no, there wasn't a whole lot of like when the prequels came around, there was already like a whole bunch of extended universe stuff that people were clearly interested in. And with the Matrix sequels, you know, you had the Wachowskis and they're just like crazy and insane and doing their own thing. But this, it felt a little bit,
I can say it's like the same thing as the Matrix though. Cause the Matrix just came out of nowhere and it was just like, you know, and it's a huge, huge hit.
But that first movie was such a phenomenon. And, it wasn't like they released the first movie and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, also, but they were almost like betting on this. Like, you don't have to see Pitch Black to get into this movie.
100%. Like, this is its own thing. Was just, they had a property that was already sci-fi that like, hey, at least it has something there. But the big thing is Vin Diesel. Because where Vin Diesel is at in his career, he had just, so this was 2004 was Chronicles of Riddick. 2003 was A Man Apart, which I remember being like generally well-liked, or at least like, I remember it being having a little bit of a falling. In 2001 was the Fast and the Furious and Knockaround Guys. Who fucking knows about Knockaround Guys? But Fast and the Furious obviously was a fucking smash. And 2002 was Triple X. So it's like he just had a run of, you know, 3 years. It was like, this is the action guy. Like, this is our action guy. He's like coming up. He was in Pitch Black in 2000. Then the next year it's Fast and the Furious. Then the year after that it's Triple X. And
99 so like, was Iron Giant.
99 was Iron Giant, but nothing to bring. You know, that probably didn't stick around with them because Iron Giant was a flop.
98, he had a little role.
Iron Giant was a huge flop, yeah.
Right. So,
Save Private Ryan.
So it's like, that's them trying to going like, they were trying to shoot for what they thought he would be, right? Which is like, oh, he's up and coming. And then obviously it does poorly because then his next movie is The Pacifier. Then he's in Find Me Guilty. And that same year is when he does the cameo in Fast and the Furious. He does Babylon 90. It isn't until 5 years later that Fast and Furious comes out and brings him back. Yeah. Like,
and now he's on the top really grossing stars of all time, like from those Fast and the Furious.
Yes, exactly.
Movies.
It really was. I think Chronicles of Riddick, just like, I think it was before its time. It really was. Mm. Because now I think everyone in that, or now, then, everyone in the industry like had a better idea of what to do with these kinds of movies. Like, Vin Diesel has come into his own. You know what I mean? Like, I think if they had released this movie in 2019, Chronicles of Riddick would be the fucking jam. You know what I mean?
It would have been a different movie, though. I think, like,
I think it would have been like an Amazon Prime series or something.
I'd be into that.
I think it would have jokes in it. You know, now if it came out.
Yeah.
So that's just so interesting. It's definitely a part of its time. Like, it's
yeah.
Weird.
I don't think I it would have been like earnest. It,
but I appreciate it. Yeah. So.
This movie felt like, to me, this movie felt like Dune. You know what I mean? There was
it's very Dune-esque. Yeah. Helion Prime. Let me start talking. I got a lot of notes. So
yeah, let's hear.
You thought we were wrapping up?
Holy
we're not
crap,
even close.
You got a binder. What the fuck?
I got binders of notes. So Helion Prime is very space Egypt, right?
It's got a lot of Egypt
influence, which also lends credence to this new mecha. So it's like, it's interesting to know that this is the far future, whatever universe this is in, because, you know, imams are around, Muslims are around. Like, this is far, this isn't some alternate sci-fi universe. This is our universe, which is Dune. Dune is very far future. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of speaks to the old, Islam, that speaks to Christianity. There's like orange Buddhism and stuff like that. Like, there's future versions of religions now. And that beginning planet does have that. It has a lot of Middle Eastern influence. It's very Dune-like, honestly. That was my note.
Especially their armor. Their armor really reminded me of Dune.
So the Necromonger armor, yeah. The Necromonger armor looks a lot like bulkier still suits from the Dune movie. But that also, it is interesting. It's weird because, if you look at the armor of the other people, the Helion Primes folks, the Helionites is probably what their name is. They have like these like kind of hats. They got like masks that come down, little scarves and shit. It all looks really cool. Like, I don't know. There was a lot of design in this movie, you know? And I think what is that? Why laughing at there being a lot of design in the movie?
It's true.
It's true. It's cool. Yeah. They put a lot of fucking work into making this everything in this movie.
I would
look
just
like
to
something.
Point out that even though I didn't like this movie, I appreciate your love for it, Cody.
Yes.
I did not appreciate, however, the several instances while we were watching this movie where Mike would yell "nerd" to Cody as he was exclaiming, "Like, oh, this is great! Look at this stuff! Look at these details!" Like, I just want to point that out. I did not appreciate that, Mike.
It is weird. There's only four of us
you
in
were
here
laughing so much and just yelling at Cody, "Nerd."
what else you got, Cody?
I'll just run through my notes real fast. We'll just hit them real quick. The Necromongers are wild looking. Dig it. Yes, the armor. I think
what about
really
the goggle
cool.
guys? Like the
yes. The guys their names are Lensers. And yes, fucking weird.
They were like, that looked like something out of like Diablo or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they you know what they reminded me of? They looked like stuff out of Guillermo del Toro stuff. Like they look like Pan's Labyrinth creatures with like glass
on
their
head.
It's
such a weird design because like you see like they're like they have like X-ray vision or whatever, and they just have like this cord.
They
with,
have
like, this little screen that the guy's walking behind them looking.
I'm
at.
Almost certain what it is they have soul vision. I think they can see souls. I'm almost certain.
I think
which is great. Because I like that they're called Lensers, and then Lord Marshall, when he talks to Vako, he says, "Lens him out and then cleanse him." Like, I like that they used Lenser as a verb for what
honestly,
they would do.
I was getting like H.R. Giger themes
yes,
a little
bit.
Yes,
a lot of
like,
stuff, definitely.
Because it was all very much like their technology was very organic looking.
Oh, the helmet
like, you know
of the main, the head Mormon had like a H.R. Giger.
Yeah, like he had like three heads on
yeah,
the helmet.
Well, the beginning shot of this movie where you see the big three-headed, three-faced spire that's about to like detonate soul bombs or whatever, spirit bombs perhaps, let's call it spirit bombs, and then it like zooms back and you think you're seeing another one, and then he turns and
his
looks at the
face,
camera and you're
yeah.
like, oh my god,
that was kind of cool, I'll admit.
Yeah, it's I think the design of all of their armor is amazing. His three-faced helmet, his shoulder pads are like all these faces, which speaks to like, you know, all the souls, like the afterlife, the underverse.
I'm having like a vision right now of Vin Diesel walking through the production office of Chronicles of Riddick, the art department specifically, going from table to table like, oh man, that's great. I yeah. love
all that stuff
on.
Probably burned up
doing.
In a universal fire or something, I bet.
God, you're totally
yeah,
right.
Yeah, now I'm visioning
there's a fire
Diesel
every 10
going,
years on that
Vin
lot.
Diesel like with like a fucking trench coat and like a flower, like a lone flower, just laying it on the art department
you know
of Chronicles of Riddick.
And I mean, something like that had to happen, Ryan, because if you look back, you think about like all the armor that they would have made for this movie. And I don't think I've seen that armor in any other movies,
no.
but like you think of all the armor in Starship Troopers, that shit gets reused
oh, yeah, good
all
point.
Over the place.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of extras in this movie. So you figure there's a lot of shit they made for it.
So maybe someone out there in the waste is selling Necromonger armor. So I'm gonna do some eBay Googling real
it
fast.
Probably got burned up in that like fire that burned up all like of
oh like the archives yeah and they're just like oh they lost millions of movies. All right, what else do I got? All caps. The Elemental Race. I wish the Elementals didn't look like humans. It'd be cool if they were weird. Riddick is a Furian. Fuck, I should have watched the animated movie. This shit is just space D&D and I love it. He was a dark assassin rogue who becomes a chosen one. How fun. Never forget his name is Richard B. Riddick. Some rough CGI on the spaceships in general, I suppose. I think the spaceships aged very poorly.
Yeah.
It was forgivable. Like, it was fine for what it was, I thought.
It was definitely like that's the era of what the CGI looked like.
Yeah, you know, speaking of the CGI, like the big expansive shots were okay, and I think what kind of the CGI,
the planets, the like the kind of like the zoom, the turns onto like the planets.
Yeah, they were cool. Good.
It wasn't as bad as it could have been.
Stood out. The parts that really stood out for me were moments when like characters are like stand like I think the worst looking shot in the movie is when you just mentioned the elemental. Judi Dench is on that ship and Tandy Newton's about to like drop her from the, you know, the drop zone in the ship or whatever, and you just see like the background in the moving like with the ship, you know, like the landscape, and it just looks so artificial.
Yeah,
that was probably the worst shot in the movie.
I don't fly, but I do glide.
Yeah, like you're like ships kind of flying through like how on planets kind of look a little bit not really textured that well.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But yeah.
It was only 2004. So
speaking of the elementals, how did they convince Judi Dench to star in this movie?
She's a nerd. She's friends with Vin Diesel. They've played D&D together.
Anthony Hopkins in Thor, you know. She's kind of have a similar role, I feel like. She probably had the whole no acting required going on. You know, the what is it? The no
you need like a Shakespearean type.
No, I'm pretty sure like Judi Dench and Vin Diesel are, I mean, maybe it's from this movie, but like
it's from this movie.
Vin Diesel know each other.
Got all the main actors to play D&D and stuff while they were making the movie.
No kidding. That's cool.
Supposedly he taught them all how to play D&D.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard Judi Dench say she's like enjoys D&D and Vin Diesel.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, do you think she has, like, a tattoo, like her level 12 warlock somewhere? I've heard stories that she does have tattoos, actually.
Interesting. I did not know that. Vin Diesel does have his D&D characters tattooed on him, which I think is Riddick. I think the name Riddick or Calder from The Last Witch Hunter. Those are both character names for his D&D characters. No fooling.
Wow. Yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah, he's a hero, man. He's literally like if one of us became an action hero and got to make a movie of the things we enjoy. That's what it is, you know? It's fucking phenomenal.
A little known fact about Vin Diesel, every time he has to make a movie, they have to CGI his face tattoo off.
Dave, we just saw him go in the bathroom. What do you have a face tattoo? I don't know who you're trying to fool,
must have gotten removed. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
I think that...
You okay in there, Dick?
Yeah, I'm fine. You got any shit tickets in this place?
Shit tickets?
Richard B. Pooping.
Diesel.
Did you have any more notes, Cody? I like your notes.
I don't know if they're any good. Let's see what other points I mentioned. The staff as a little mini big ship spire must be crazy ass dark matter. When the necromongers first fight the Helionites and Imam is like kind of running, there's like that street combat and the necromongers are all running up with melee weapons to fight hand to hand. And it's just so one guy can shove the staff into the ground and it makes like a little version of the big spires. I think that's cool.
It's kind of a weird part where it kind of like flashes and then there's all those guys kind of in the alleys. Like it. Like you thought they were all gone, but they're
and then it's like just kidding.
Street.
We're all fucking here now,
yeah,
because we're crazy. And another note goes into that later, but it's like it's interesting how the necromongers come off in the beginning chunk of this movie that they're like this crazy faceless evil force, and then we get to the point later when they're on crematoria and the guards for crematoria are trying to flee, and the guards are all dressed like French police officers or whatever, and they're like, oh, we don't give a
they're
fuck
like
about
Russians.
These guys. They just start trying to light them up. Russian, you think?
Oh, yeah. They're like drinking
of
vodka
Russian,
and like,
Anatolian
yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
They were like Canto Bites guards or the security.
I'm telling you, they look like French police. Yeah. But I definitely see what you're saying.
Well, they were the characters that were allowed to have a little more personality because they're hanging around with Carl Urban.
Speaking of crematorium, what about that shot of the, I don't know the actor, but I've seen him in other things. He's always playing kind of this weird guy. He's the other Furion that like walks out into the sun and like burns to death.
That's Bruce Wayne's dad in Batman Begins.
That's it.
Wow.
That's it. He's also, what's his name from Green Day? Just kidding.
Mike Dern.
Well, no, he's what's his name from
Do you have the
Mandy.
Time?
I haven't seen Mandy.
He is what's his name from Mandy. He's the bad guy in Mandy.
Mandy.
So yeah, he's Thomas Wayne in Batman Begins. He's Bruce? What's the line?
What do we do, Riddick? When we fall.
What is the line? You pick ourselves back up or something?
Yeah. Why do we fall, Master Bruce? But isn't that Michael Caine saying that?
Yeah, but his dad says it first.
Okay, all right, sure.
Do you think, now that you mentioned that guy, do you think Game of Thrones writers for season 8 stole that death scene for Melisandre?
It's kind of similar.
Interesting, yeah.
You see him, like, burn up, though. It's like, he, like, burns, and then he, like, he stumbles and gets back up and starts walking again.
We're both, like... Well, we feel pretty confident that no one saw Chronicles of Riddick. We just lived it entirely.
Anyways, what was your point, Ryan, about this? About him, the other Furion?
He just a crazy death scene. I don't know. It's just kind of crazy looking. So kind of scary.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah. Just cool part. I don't know.
It is cool part. Hey,
trying to think of other cool parts.
let me look at my notes to see if there's any other cool
parts.
Because
we're not going to attempt to talk about the story.
The whole, scene with the capturing Riddick is really cool. I think that's all like maybe one of the best done action sequences.
That's one thing I want to talk about.
There's a lot of rope. There's a lot of rope work in this movie. A lot of people spin around. A lot of people like to spin real fast.
It's so funny that like the gunners of that ship are literally just like hanging by a cable off of the wing.
I thought that was funny. Yeah, but one thing I appreciate about movies like this, sequels that do this, where you see development of the character, like in appearance, like especially in like these sort of like movies where they're on the run or whatever. Like for instance, they do it in Road Warrior. Like in the first Mad Max, he's like this clean looking kind of cop, and then the second one, he's been roaming the wasteland. His suit's all fucked up, and his hair's all ragged. In this one, in Chronicles of Riddick. We get long-haired Vin Diesel, and I wish he'd stayed this way for the entire movie.
I think Vin Diesel like wants to have hair and beard really bad because his look is very reminiscent of his look in The Last Witch Hunter back in the past. He has long hair and a big beard in The Last Witch Hunter, and then in the modern day is all clean-shaven and bald.
he probably can't grow a beard.
It's probably just solely like, I want to look like this, and like, Vin... We'll make your fucking D&D movie, but you have to be on the poster looking like you so people will come and see it. And he's like, oh, but Calder wouldn't have that. Calder has long hair and beard.
What about his, what was I going to say? I forgot. I lost it. Never mind.
Anything else cool?
Is there much else to say about the movie?
Oh, I'll just say there's a bunch of like those spinning things. Like there's that Palpatine move from Revenge
from
of
Vako,
the Sith. Yeah.
When they're on Crematoria and Vako just like spins himself up into a punch. I was very like, what the fuck was this?
I heard the Emperor Senate. Go, yeah. Like when he did that. It was like a huge callback moment for me.
My note for that is Vako kung fu spinning off ground. Woo wee. I think at the end the fist fight in the armor looks clunky because the armor is so big, which is good because the armor should look like that, but it is weird that they choose to fist fight, but it gives us a pretty cool final kill. There's soul speed. There's a triple axe and a head stab. I don't know. I'm into that.
I did like that moment at the end when Carl Urban's like, now's my chance. Like he's been stabbed. He's weak. The Lord Marshal. I'm going to kill him and take the throne. It's a double moment where Carl Urban's coming with the axe and he thinks he's gonna kill Lord Marshall, but then you see his soul escape. And it's like a funny moment because
it's like a League of Legends thing.
You see Lord Marshall, played by Colm Feore, like you see both of his faces, his body reacting to like
I really liked it. Yeah.
To Carl Urban like coming to kill him, and then like his soul, his face looking at like
running
Diesel
into
going,
Vin Diesel,
oh fuck, I'm fucked both ways. That's a fun moment.
Yeah.
It's like almost like a League of Legends or like a Smash Brothers move where like you're blinking away from someone else just to get like killed by the other guy that's waiting there.
It led to I think the most inadvertent moment of comedy in the movie, and it's from Tandy Newman. It's when she realizes that Richard B. Riddick was the one who killed Lord Marshall, and you see her. She realizes she's like, no.
Yeah, she does.
So Mike, you mentioned that the hammiest character in the movie is Carl Urban. I disagree. But I think it's Tandy Newman.
Both
she
of them,
so
in fairness, their whole thing is like they
they're
get
a pair.
It for sure.
Yeah,
that's true.
No.
Now, what would be the odds of that?
Yeah, it's very Shakespearean. Like she's just like whispering in his ear.
She slinks.
Yeah,
everywhere.
She's very much a babe in this movie. I don't know if you guys knew this. She's
a babe.
She's a babe.
She is reptilian for sure.
But all she does
reptilian.
Is like
she's dressed like a lizard a lot.
Yeah, her whole character is like on people's shoulders. Like, most of her screen time is spent holding someone, like holding their shoulders and speaking into their ear. You know, it's very over the top, and like, it was fun to watch in a so bad it's good way. She's just having it on. So again, it's the earnestness. Yes. Like, everyone is just here to play, and I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Same thing with me. Like, the movie doesn't quite work for me, but I do appreciate a lot of aspects about it, and I like a good swing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's an earnest swing.
But it doesn't quite work. And I think I do like the middle chunk more than I do the nerdy. While I do like Space Mormons, I think that's cool. I kind of agree that it's a little bit like two movies mashed together a little bit. And I think I liked the more grimy, alien-esque movie more than the other one a little
then
bit.
Then you probably will like Riddick more, because I think Riddick goes more that direction.
The deleted subplot we didn't get to see in this movie was Carl Urban and Tanya Newman wanting to get married in the temple. We didn't get to see that scene.
They're already married, David. She says in the intro scene that she needs to be next to her husband.
They're going to the celestial kingdom, you know.
Called the Underverse, guys.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't really like love the movie, or maybe even like it, but I want to watch Pitch Black and Riddick now. Like, I'm intrigued.
I had the same reaction.
I want to see where they take this. There were some ideas there, for sure.
Like, I found myself like, well, I guess I got to stay for the stinger. Surely there's a stinger, right? Like, even though I'd seen Riddick before, it's just like there was a weird urge in me to be like, I got to see that scene with Carl Urban coming, where he comes back and they address the events of this movie. Like, I didn't like this movie, but I still need to know.
I feel like Pitch Black, it's kind of fall. I know it's 2000, I think, that when that came out, but like,
yes,
there was a lot of movies that felt they're not even the same. But I, and the thing in my head, because I was only like in sixth grade around this time, was like The Faculty, and there's like another like kind of horror movie that kind of have like similar titles. I know that The Faculty is more of like a teen horror movie, but for some reason, like that and Pitch Black, and I feel like there's a third one. Like, I can't think of the name.
The Faculty and Pitch Black are very different titles.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what that connection is. There are two words.
I don't know what the
just like around that time, and just kind of like these.
I feel like maybe you're thinking of like Ghosts of Mars, like, which was another sci-fi horror action movie with John Carpenter.
John Carpenter's
like Ghosts of Mars. Yeah, he directed that one. I think sci-fi horror had a Event Horizon, like the 2000.
Yeah.
That was an era of, our sci-fi is going to be sci-fi, but it's actually horror sci-fi. Because at the time, you know, the Matrix is elsewhere, the Star Wars movies are coming out. I imagine at the time it was just
that,
like,
might be,
well,
too, the
sci-fi
first,
plus.
First batch of filmmakers who were making movies who were fans of, like, aliens and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. The timeline makes sense. It's like 20 years after Alien.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's thinking about, for some reason, I just remember, like, being a kid, and they're, like, these R-rated movies I wanted to see, but, you know, didn't have anybody to take me to, kind of thing, and I had to see on cable later, you know?
Yeah.
Just, like, that batch of movies. And I feel like Pitch Black was one of those. Where, like, I had, like, a friend that lived behind me that, like, his parents would rent them, you know? I would go over to his house to watch these movies because, you know, his parents would rent them. Kind of thing.
You remember when watching movies was a communal experience, and you're just like, oh, I can't watch this anywhere, but my friend got it, so I'm going to go to his house to watch a movie.
There was no streaming at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Cody, before we end, I want to ask you, since you're definitely the Riddick stan, how would you rank, including the anime and the video game, if you played it, I guess, how do you rank the core Riddick properties?
Well, as a person who hasn't played the video game or watched the anime, sorry, just the three movies, and I can only attest to really Chronicles of Riddick, because, like I said, I've seen all of them, but none of them lasted with me, and maybe I was just at a different point in my life. I don't know. But nowadays, I watch it, I'm like, oh, all this adds up. I'm going to go get a fucking Furion hand tattoo on my chest right now. I think it probably goes, you know, again, out of nothing. I think it's like Chronicles of Riddick, Riddick, and then Pitch Black, or maybe Riddick, Chronicles of Riddick, Pitch Black. I'd have to see Riddick again to know for sure. I think Pitch Black is a good movie, but it is not the same, like, Riddick property. Because yeah, it's not a totally Riddick property. Thing. It's a totally different thing, but it has him in it. And I think Chronicles of Riddick, you know, is such a big swing, such a big, like, to go from a movie where the character is kind of a side character and then be like, the whole thing's about him and he's destined to slay a necromonger leader and shit like that. Like, it's such a badass move.
Well, before you leave the store today, I think in our shed out back, there's some welding equipment if you want to weld some Helion Prime armor or anything like that.
I was going to say, like, I know a guy in Bartertown if you want to get that tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I'm sure Vin has a guy.
Good point.
The best way to kind of explain this movie, it's almost like if, like, I want to say, like, if Vasquez got her own movie after Aliens or something like that. Is that kind of like a good comparison? I'm trying to think of another comparison of, like, a spinoff.
Yeah. But Vasquez actually turned out to be, like, not fully human, actually a cyborg, actually is a Terminator, and was sent to the far future to slay aliens. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It is like that. That is a good comparison.
I was just trying to think of another comparison of, like, you know, ragtag alien horror movie, and then, like, the badass character gets a spinoff that's,
yeah,
like
more
crazy.
Of that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird one. It's sort of a... Riddick a Pitch Black story, you know, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the Pitch Black would be the name of the franchise. Yeah.
Pitch Black presents.
Yeah, I'm glad to kind of revisit it. I probably won't anytime ever again or soon. But I do glad I got to, like, kind of confirm myself, like, what was the deal with that movie?
I think I did see that movie and I know a little bit about it, yeah.
Yeah. So it was fun.
I'm gonna watch Riddick, like, as soon as possible.
Well, I've been marathoning the Fast and the Furious movies. I'm all about Vin right now. So
there's probably, like, a lore connection between those two somewhere. Like, I bet Vin is, like, put in something. Like, he wore a thing, so it's, like, technically the Riddick and Fast and Furious universe are connected.
Well, Mike, that's a good question. Maybe we can ask the man himself, Richard B. Riddick, aka Vin Diesel. Mr. Diesel, would you mind if we asked you some nerdy questions about your old movies?
No, not at all. I love talking to my fans. We're like family, you know?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
So, Vin, I was wondering about Riddick and the Fast and the Furious movies. Are they, like, connected? I mean, are they in the same cinematic universe?
Sure. All my movies are connected. Furious 7 references Pitch Black. The Pacifier references Saving Private Ryan. Even Babylon AD references Find Me Guilty.
Really? Wow, I never noticed those Easter eggs.
Yeah, man, I like to think all my movies share the same cinematic universe. If you look close, you can see the Iron Giant walking around in the background in XXX.
No shit. Damn. Eat your heart out, Marvel.
Vin, I had a question too.
What's on your mind, Ryan?
Well, I was wondering how you managed to look so good. I mean, you've got to be like, what, 100? How's your skin not affected by the radiation?
Well, you see, I made an unholy union with a level 70 witch years ago for everlasting youth and chiseled pecs.
What? I thought level 20 was the highest level you could achieve.
Not in real life.
Whoa.
Ask any D&D player, any real D&D player. It don't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, winning's winning.
Sound weird to you guys?
No,
sound the same to me.
Huh. Okay. I guess it was just me.
It's an animal thing.